Welcome to this episode of the Rich Martin Podcast. And today, oh, it's a great one. I get to speak with my friend Joe Hargreaves. Joe is a psychotherapist who's based in the UK and does incredible work with individuals and churches all around therapy, but also around church leadership, and comes from a wealth of knowledge. She's been a church leader for a number of years, maybe, I don't know if it's 15 or 20 years, she's been leading in church with her husband in a city called Lincoln in the UK. And they have the most incredible story, but also her insights into church leadership are really refreshing. And so she talks really openly and honestly in this episode about her journey of building church, how she sees church could maybe be a little bit healthier. And also we unpack their way that they've just retracted back from doing church on a more community missional way. And they've come back to saying, we're just going to meet together as one big group. And she talks really openly about how they came through that. And so you're going to enjoy it. Love this lady. She's been such a blessing to my world. And I know that you'll enjoy the conversation. So let's jump straight in to Joe Hargreaves. It's so good to be here with a friend, Joe Hargreaves, who is doing amazing work in the UK. And so massive thanks for being with us, Joe.
Oh, my pleasure, Rich. Thanks for having me.
And people might not know you. I gave you a little bit of an introduction before we started. Could you just give, like, the Joe Hargreaves story?
The Joe Hargreaves story. Okay. Well, I find myself in Lincoln. I live in Lincoln, kind of in the middle of the country. I'm married to Dan, who is a pastor. I've got three brilliant kids who are 9, 6, and just coming up for 2. And I am a psychotherapist. And just about to, I'm just in the midst of doing my master's in psychotherapy and counselling. But I practice as a psychotherapist. I see individual clients, but I also do some training and some working alongside corporate companies, charities, churches and schools around therapy and healthy, holy cultures. And then I do some freelance writing for Glorify, which is how I've really connected with you.
I know. Which we could talk about for ages, but that's not what this is about. Give us a little bit of your church journey, though, Joe. So you're also a church leader with your husband, Dan. Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
Yeah, it's kind of finding a rhythm, actually. It looked like carnage for quite a bit because Dan and I are both, we're both a certain type of leader. I guess maybe we're both leaders. Put two leaders together and you have a bit of a clash. Put them in a marriage and in a house together. It's a bit like a terrible Christian version of Big Brother. It's been a real journey of finding out who he is and who I am and how we lead together. We've really led together for about a decade now. We planted out of a big central church, which was called New Life, is now called Alive. And we then set up a location. So we were sent out with a certain amount of people. Just brilliant people to build it up and set up a location in the south of our city of Lincoln. So we're still doing that now, though actually things have changed after really beating the drum for leading together and everything being equal for 10 years. I've actually taken a bit of a sidestep now. So things have changed and shifted over the decade or so.
And this church, I know a little bit of the journey of it, which is amazing. Alive Lincoln, part of the Ground Level Network. You were on staff there, and then part of this change is you've transitioned off staff.
Yeah. Did the usual trajectory of being youth. We did youth and then went on to doing pastoring. And so I was location pastor, and actually I still am. It's just not within a paid role. So I am still doing that, essentially. Stepped off that being my full-time role. And also I was heading up our Alive Academy, which is all of our training and discipleship, Bible teaching stuff. So, yeah, transitioned off that in a year. So I've had an adoption leave for a year, actually, which gave me lots of time and space to think about and hear from God about the next move and the next steps. And it just kind of, instead of it being one of those really clunky things that often when you transition, you know, it can be a bit tricky and a bit clunky, it really kind of flowed because of the adoption leave and how everything was going in the church anyway. So I have transitioned essentially from that being my full-time job to that being something where I serve and where I'm planted and rooted, but it isn't my full-time job.
How does it feel?
It feels good, actually. I've hesitated at that because I thought, is it going to sound terrible if I say it feels good and it feels liberating? Because it does feel good and liberating, because actually I'm still doing the stuff. And I think if you were someone who came to our church and just showed up every Sunday, you wouldn't even know the difference. So there's not a massive on the ground difference. I'm around, I'm preaching, I'm there, I love people, we're connected with people. But for me personally, it feels liberating because I like to have my fingers in lots of pies. I like to be doing lots of different things. And I think being a church leader is a real certain call. Mm. And I'm not sure it's mine, actually. Right. Part of what I love to do, but not all of it. You know, I'm not the real deal. Like my husband, he's a church leader, you know. That's what he wants to do through and through. That's who he is. Whereas for me, maybe I'm a bit greedy. I like to do more.
No, but I know the feeling. Like lots of people will say to me, oh, Rich, when are you going to get your own church? I say lots. A few people have always said to me, you know, you're going to do your own church one time. And I'm like, oh, I feel like I have to fit into this mold because I'm part of church leadership. And it's as if you don't choose the golden ticket, which is the church leader ticket, you're kind of secondary. Whereas I've kind of like realized like, oh, wow, like you can do lots and you're still like primary with God. Like he's still, it's not like you let the side down. So definitely can relate to part of that journey. What would you say your leadership of church over the last 10 years, how has it changed? And I mean, how has Joe's leadership over the last 10 years changed? So, you know, I could only imagine 10 years ago, I suspect you were running some sort of youth stuff, like you were saying. And now, you know, you find yourself in a different place. How's it changed?
Yeah, that's such a good question and really interesting to reflect on, actually. I think personally, I've gone from a place of, and maybe that this is probably personally, but it outworks into my church leadership because it's just so interlinked and intersected, isn't it? So I'd say I've definitely gone from a place of certainty to curiosity. And that's not a note on my faith. My faith remains the same. In fact, it's stronger and richer, deeper than it ever has been before. But I think I probably, you know, that thing you said about fitting a mold. I think I was really good at observing what the mold was, what needed to be said, what needed to be worn, what the uniform was, you know, internally and externally, and doing all the right things. And that became a slight place of, to use a bit of a therapeutic phrase, cognitive dissonance for me, because what I was really feeling wasn't always outworked for me. And I actually, do you know, I sometimes see this in church leaders, this cognitive dissonance of like, I'm playing this role, I'm doing this thing, but it might, sometimes it really matches up with what's going on for us internally and sometimes it doesn't. And I definitely began to sense a bit of a mismatch for me. And so I've really reconciled that to myself with, instead of watching myself being watched, which I definitely did for a lot of years, particularly bringing up little kids in church, watching myself being watched parenting, watching myself being watched in as a leader, doing all the right things, to then just becoming to a place of curiosity. And to me, it's like an expansion of, I don't know if you've read much of Richard Rohr, but he's written this brilliant book called Falling Upwards and talks about the first phase of life and the second phase of life. And I feel very much for me, the last decade has been going from the first phase of life into the second phase of seeing things a bit deeper, richer, getting more curious rather than being certain. So I definitely say that. That's one. The other biggest thing for me has been an understanding that I am an introvert and as opposed to an extrovert. I think a lot of church leadership is around extroversion. It's very all outward, a lot of people orientated, all that kind of stuff. And I used to think I'm a terrible Christian because I hate family fun days. I hate this stuff. I hate all of this stuff that we're doing. And I remember just saying to my husband one day, I hate all of this. Like, I see the good in it. I see that it's so good and it's so worthy. You're so good at it. But honestly, I am drained and I come home and I'm like a worse Christian than I was than before I even went to church this morning. And now I've realized, I've reconciled it to myself that we don't all have to be the upfront extrovert, give me an amen, type of pastor, that, well, there's a different way of leading. And I've just become more confident with how I lead, that I, you know, there isn't a mold. And if there isn't a mold, that gives us all some liberation to just be ourselves, doesn't it?
Wow. It totally does. What about with your like therapeutic hat on? I mean, what's really interesting about yourself, Jo, on many fronts is you've got this therapeutic hat, you've got this deep understanding of church leadership and staffing, right? You've been involved in a church in Europe that's a well-known church, and you've been involved in all the staffing dynamics for many, many years, as well as leadership dynamics. You're also like this volunteer now pastor who like not doesn't just help her husband, but also preaches and helps lead the congregation in front of them. What, with all those hats on and the therapeutic one to throw in there as well, what do you think healthy church leadership looks like?
Yeah, another really good question. Okay, well, I think for me, this, and you've mentioned it, this intersection of theology and therapy for me is started off as quite a niche interest that no one was much interested in, but definitely post-pandemic, people have been getting more interested about it. I've tried to boil down to help answer your question, what is it? Where do I see the theology-therapy intersection? And then how can we then, if there was a phrase, even better, if there was a scripture that would nail this, of then what does it look like to be a follower of Jesus that's got a good kind of, that is grounded theologically, but also like has a therapeutic understanding of themselves and their place in the world. And after reading scriptures, I boiled it down to this. It's in 1 Thessalonians 5 and it's verse 23. And actually, I love the Message paraphrase more than any of the translations. But the NIV talks about being made holy and whole, that we're to be made holy and whole, body, soul, and spirit. And for me, healthy church leadership is about holiness and it's about wholeness, this idea of shalom. And I love that actually church is beginning to understand the mental health the wider narrative around mental health and stuff, and actually beginning to reclaim it for ourselves, because it was all God's idea in the first place. So mental health, which can't be separated, can it, from physical health, spiritual health, emotional health, is all God's idea and actually very much belongs in the church. It's kind of all got kind of usurped and taken by secular society. But I'm like, no, we'll have that back, thank you very much, because it's God's idea. It's God's design for humanity. So, of course, leaders out of everybody, not that there's a hierarchy because I can't stand that stuff, but, you know, if we're modeling, we should be holy and we should be whole. And it goes on then to say in body, soul and spirit. So I think as church leaders, we should have a good understanding of body, soul and spirit, that we're tripartite beings, that we're made of body, soul, spirit. We're not bipartite, whereas it's kind of like soul and spirit are the same thing. They're not. So we should be emotionally healthy, physically healthy and spiritually healthy as well. And that to me is a kind of undergirding verse of justifying why we should be healthy, you know, healthy, whole leaders, holy and whole. Does that answer the question?
Well,
a bit of it, yeah, but I'm still like intrigued. Do you think, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Do you think the way that we've set up church enables that?
Ooh. Okay.
I mean, I don't want to throw you hot water. I don't want your husband getting sacked off the back of this question. But like, okay. You describe this utopia of a church leader there. I'm like, oh, wow, I'd love to. That sounds amazing. But then the realities, right, of how we've set stuff up. So we've set these things up where success metrics do matter, right? We call it fruit in the church world, but the business world will call it kind of like KPIs or success, yeah. And we have our own versions of it. And yeah. Sundays are still a big measuring stick, and baptisms, marriages, it could be all sorts, right? And they're all really good things. Like, how amazing to be part of a baptism service, or to see someone get married, or to have new kids in your church. And so what you've just described, I'm like, oh, wow, that sounds utopic in the sense of someone could have that if they didn't get involved in the structures and systems of church life. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. And actually, so I think some people can hold it all in tension. They can exist within those structures, within their hitting their KPIs and doing all that kind of stuff, whilst remaining or pursuing at least a sense of holiness and a sense of wholeness. I couldn't, which is why I've made the move that I have. If I'm going to be totally honest, why am I not working for church full time, yet still doing it in a voluntary capacity because I love it and I love people, because I can't hold the two in tension. Whether that's, I don't know what that says about me. And actually, I don't much care. I just know that I can't hold the two in tension, and that when I'm, I think, how do we avoid it? I think we need a very clear definition of what's kingdom building and what's empire building, which is a whole nother thing, isn't it? A whole big conversation. But I think all the way I see it, even theologically, the whole way throughout scripture, humans have such a predisposition to building things. And every so often, God kind of condescends to us, puts his hands on our face and redirects us and says, not this, this, not empire, kingdom. And I think I see that there's a lot of that going on. And because with the kingdom, being healthy and whole is just a byproduct of being in the kingdom. That's who we are. That's who we're created to be. That's when we're connected to God and we're connected to ourselves and each other, that stuff naturally flows. When there's a blockage to that stuff, I'd always ask the question, well, what are we seeking? Because if when we seek first the kingdom, everything gets added to us, including holiness and wholeness, great. But if we're kind of going off on our own way, it probably does. And I don't think it should sound utopic or whatever the verb or the noun is for that. I'm not sure. But I think it should be the hallmark of who we are as followers of Jesus. But somewhere along the way, we've tripped up, haven't we? I think there's redirection.
Yeah, I mean, it's really fascinating listening to you talk honestly, and I don't want to press too many buttons, but the journey, are you essentially saying that, you know, you were honest there saying I moved on because I couldn't cope with that tension? And are you saying that that is a key part of leadership, which is keeping the holiness and keeping, you call it holiness and
wholeness, physically, mentally, emotionally, like well-being, essentially. Yeah.
And did you pull yourself out of an environment because your core values are, as a leader, they're core to me, and I can't fulfill them in a certain setup because of how I'm wired, and that's totally okay. There are others that can. That journey of coming off, is that replicable? Does it wreck people doing that? Like, I suppose I'm just trying to unpack, like, seems like you're absolutely flourishing, Joe, which is amazing. I think that's so fascinating. I think what I'm actually trying to get to is, I wonder how as a church we could do better so that you didn't have to leave. Or, you know, I put myself in a similar position, which is part and parcel of moving on staff was, well, you'd probably call the same, Holy Spirit doing something new in you. There's a newness that's gone on in me, and that newness I've discovered, I'm wondering, we could do it better. That's why I do these podcasts, really. I think there's a better way that we could do it. Like, is there anything you would say back into, hey, I think we could do these things better? And I'm sure your church and my church, I know they have, we've implemented all sorts of things to do better stuff.
Yeah. And I think there's a really gracious way to come at it, isn't it? Is that everyone's doing the best they can with what we have at the team.
Right.
Is that we're not being, this is not for character assassinations or finger pointing. It's everyone's doing the best they can with the revelation with what we have at the time. I do, because we can't have every intuitive person with values similar to mine go, oh yeah, no, I totally resonate. I need to step back, actually, because that's just not, it's, so is it replicable? Well, actually, probably not. Like you said, there's a better way. And if it is replicated, then we've got a problem, haven't we? We've lost a really large proportion of people in our church and leadership structures who we need there. We need people. I do think there's a better way. And I think the better way and how we operationalize this is interesting and probably, you know, way more than a podcast. It's like a whole, months of conversation. But how do we operationalize it? Again, it's like, okay, so how do we seek first the kingdom? To me, the distinction for me personally came down to, and this again, I'm this is personal for me.
It
came down to, okay, where am I kingdom building and where am I empire building? Do I want to empire build? No. Do I want a kingdom build? Yes. So therefore I need to make these moves. I need to step down from this and I need to step up to this and all this kind of stuff. But that's not to say, again, like I said, it's a personal thing. That isn't to say that I think that my whole church or the whole church empire building. That's not what I'm saying.
Yep.
So, how do we operationalize it? I don't know. How do you think we operationalize it, Rich? What do you think?
You're turning the key here.
I am.
Yeah. I like the softness of your approach, which is, I don't think it's a one size fit all. Mm. I do think what we've seen with churches, I think we've all been humbled because we are the church. I've certainly been humbled in this process of realizing, you know, taking your point, which is like, you know, how do I look at the plank in my own eye and not just try to say there's a plank in the church's eye. I am the church. And that's been a big, deep journey to me. Mm. I'm aware that the way that I've led has hurt people. And that's been a tough journey for me to go through. Mm. And I think, you know, there's a phrase that one of my friends has given me, which is the pace of Jesus. I think one of the things the churches that we've been involved with, wider than just our branded churches, but just like that style of church, that evangelical Pentecostal style of church, I feel like we're now getting back into the pace of Jesus. And the pace of Jesus is not with stress or strife. You think pre-COVID, how we were discussing everything from Sundays to putting on events to, and you look back, or I certainly look back with this kind of like, oh, I can't believe I was involved in some of that conversation. Yeah. Like, what was in me and what went wrong? Well, that's across the board, right? And realizing, like Peter in the garden, right? Peter in the garden sliced off an ear, but Jesus was able to heal the ear. And it was like, I've sliced off some ears, but thank God for Jesus, he can heal a few ears, right? Like, it's like his heart was good. And I hope that my heart was good. I'm sure that when I get to heaven, it'll be revealed that there's all sorts of dodgy stuff in there. But I hope that within all of the decisions I made, but I think that pace of Jesus is kicking back into the church. I think we're seeing people, the church, taking it at a pace that's like, hold up, what about our communities? What about our staff? We need to slow this down, that's healthy, so that we can be whole and holy, and that we don't need to just burn through and go get another person to do this and burn through them and go get another to try build these event structures, systems. We can just look for the miracle of God and see that the pace of Jesus. So that's kind of my roundabout answer without having to go too personal. But I pushed you for personal, so I'm backing out a little bit as well there, Joe.
I love it. And actually, the key thing that you said there for me was people. It's about people. People are so precious. And it's all, I mean, it sounds like a trite thing to say, but actually it is. It's all about people. And if I think when Jesus was pressed on some of this stuff of like, you know, come on, what's the take it down to the lowest common denominator. What is it? Mm. It's love God, love others as you love yourself. And to me, that's whole and holy work. Mm. And you can't kind of agenda or KPI or hustle your way through that stuff, can you? It's like a deep, and I love that idea of the pace of Jesus. I'm reading at the minute Richard Foster, The Celebration of Discipline. And it's just so good. I can, The Ruthless Elimination of Hustle, the John Mark Comer book, I can see actually was born out of, I imagine he read that book first, before writing his book. And it's just so good about returning to the disciplines, returning kind of to the very simple but beautifully profound blueprint. And I think, I can't remember who's, actually, I was going to say, I can't remember who wrote the quote. It's in Proverbs about actually man's been made, this is a terrible paraphrase from me, but yeah, man's been made pretty simple. Any drama is of his own doing. And I'm like, yeah, no, that's it. We've made it so dramatic.
Yeah.
Whereas actually it really needn't be. So yeah, people are just incredibly precious. And that's to me, how do you operationalize it? By loving people, essentially.
And I think the rise of people wanting to do smaller setting style of church is being birthed out of, it is difficult to look after large numbers of people, both being part of it. It's not insurmountable. Like, it's totally doable. It requires a certain type of person who likes that way of doing things. But I think seeing this emergence of people going, I think we can look after people, we can release more leaders to do it, and we can see more churches or expressions of the kingdom come about. And that might be in smaller set numbers. And the celebration of that's really nice to see, that it's not all just one weighted, that the only fruit is how many people are sat in the room, that there's also now celebration of the spirit that people are going at, which is, I just want to help some people. And if that's five, I'm really grateful. If that's 5,000, I'm really grateful. And what I'm really excited about, why I'm really intrigued about your journey as well, I'm really excited about the fact that you've got a big spirit to reach people, and yet you're finding this new avenue that doesn't look like the traditional church kind of, you know, you mapped out at the beginning. I was the youth worker. I'll move from the, you know, you go up the ladder of this church ladder till eventually you become a pastor. That the kingdom is expanding and is using Joe and Dan to do some extraordinary things, from adoption to helping people with their mental health. And I think that kind of, it's a soup thought that I've just put out there, but that thought, which is, oh wow, like there's these amazing avenues that God's using beyond just a Sunday setting. And yet you're as passionate as I am to make sure we don't pull down the Sunday setting stuff, because, you know, there's those people who say, oh, it's easy to gather a crowd. I think they've never worked for church that's tried to gather a crowd. Because it's a lot of work. It's like, have you tried to gather a crowd? You know, it's huge amounts of work, right? And so, my passion around what I'm walking into, my bigger passion at the moment is, look, there's this buffet table that's coming. It's called the Kingdom of God, and it's going to look different. It will not always look like meeting on a Sunday morning at 10:30, and it won't always look like a prayer meeting on a Wednesday. Yeah. There's so many expressions, and God's not constrained to man's method of doing things, and we know that because there's all sorts of people that are rising up doing amazing things, writing books that are pushing the boundaries and speaking and becoming specialists in areas, and that's so exciting. And so, you know, is it big church, small church, little church, home church, church in the office? I don't care. Do you know what I mean? Like, as long as there's a great big spirit of doing the best with what they've got, and God doing some stuff. So roundabout way, but let me go to some more questions, Joe, because it's not you interviewing me, but I've loved chatting to you. You're a true therapist. You've sat and listened.
Brilliant. Look,
I know a little bit of the journey of where you've done. Could you tell the listeners your journey of, you were running this church, you and your husband, and you made a decision as a wider church to say, we're going to break out into micro churches. We're going to start doing smaller gatherings. And now you're back to actually not doing those smaller gatherings, but you're now back to meeting as a church. Could you give people a kind of journey of what happened and how you've landed back to where you were?
Yeah. Yeah. So we've kind of done it all, and it's off. I guess COVID was a real contributor to this, of like the cultural setting of which we did it in. So I guess to understand Alive Lincoln South, we're part of Alive as a whole, and there's different locations, different expressions across the city and beyond. So we made the decision kind of right. Some of it was really practical about, you know, there being caps on how many people you could limit and gather together. So just to personalize it for us as a location in the South, we had a location in the South of a certain amount of people, like say 300, 350 people. If you ask my husband, it'll be more because he's an evangelist. But I think that's, you know, I think that's a fair figure. And what we did was, after doing online services and, you know, like trying to pivot and shift and adjust to what was going on in the wider world at the time, off the back of that, when we could begin to meet, we then took some of our key leaders. And this definitely is really key for us in church. And I love this about our church, is always investing in people. There's always people who can lead and step in and step up. There's, really great. Great bunch of people. So these leaders, so there's Dan and I, then there's two other couples, and then essentially we do it through our community, through our connect groups, our small groups, used to be called cell groups, you remember, years ago. Then we kind of, it sounds a really crass process, but believe me, it was blood, sweat and tears, of like, we look at all of the different life groups, community groups, and we kind of assign them to different communities. So then we've gone from one Sunday gathering into three Sunday gatherings in which we're meeting in smaller communities. Then when we're able to, we kind of gather together all together once a month for kind of one church Sunday, we'd call it.
And what drove that decision? Yeah.
Okay. So it was done on the back of some research. It was secular research, which then got kind of taken for the church community by a guy called Dr. Roger Bretherton and some other people. Dr. Roger Bretherton is a senior lecturer in psychology at Lincoln University, and also he comes to Alive Church. So we kind of got right in on this brilliant research that was done that actually, and I think it's like neurobiologically, we know that theologically and neurobiologically, man isn't meant to be on their own. It doesn't work. We work well in communities, but actually there's a gap. There's a cap of around 150 people of of who you can know. With 150 people, being around that many people, you can remember that their gran was poorly, or you can remember their birthday. You know, we kind of have the ability to have that many connections. So it was driven not just by qualitative stuff, but good quantitative data as well. So we're like, this would be great. And also, Dan and I are really big champions of let's empower people to go and do it. So it felt like a great empowerment model. Isn't this brilliant? Because there's three things. People will have to raise up. And it isn't just one person at the front. You know, there's going to be lots of different people. And it all sounds great in theory, Rich.
Come on.
And it was.
I want to be part of that. That's what I'm thinking. But,
of course, yes. Yeah, sign me up. That sounds brilliant. And it was up to a point. But then essentially, you can't get away from systems and structures that happen when people gather together. And what happened was we were just doing three times the amount of work, because you had to have three worship teams and three prayer teams and three kids teams. And what we'd found is actually there's pros and cons. There was some really good stuff. And actually people really stepped up. People who'd been quiet and sat at the back for years stepped up, and all of a sudden they were leading something or they were praying out loud. All that stuff was wonderful. There was a few things that where it didn't work. One, it increased the workload. Two, we found that one location, say, for example, Dan and I's would have loads of young families because we are a young family. Well, we're not that young, but our family are young, you know, so we'd get all the young families come to us. So we'd have great kids work because we'd have loads of kids workers. But then go to the one down the road, they've got nobody who wants to do kids. So therefore, kids and families don't really go to them. They all come to us. And it ended up weirdly becoming quite separate. So our young adults go to this one, our older generation go to this one, and our families go to this one. And that was not who we are, because we're intergenerational. We are. We want to have good representative, like culturally. And we found that like attract like. And then we ended up in kind of three separate groups. We also found that actually our invitational culture dipped, which was really sad, that actually it kind of became quite insular. And I don't want to use the term holy huddle, but it was something like it. And we began to see our invitational culture drop and new people coming in drop. And that was a shame. And that was a problem for us because we're very outward looking. So then we've gathered back together, which is a journey in and of itself, because, you know, these are people's lives saying, right, we're one church. Oh, no, we're a community. Oh, we're going to do this again. So we have to be really mindful of how people feel about that stuff. But yeah, you know, pros and cons. So we found, and actually we're really happy with where we are now, but we'll see.
And how did you go back to the church, to the communities, and say to them, we're now going to come back under as one church? And how did that go down? Because, you know, like you touched on it gently there, saying it, they're people's lives. Yeah. And they've bought into a vision. Did you go back with an apology? Did you go back saying, we've got it wrong? Or did you go back saying it just didn't work out? Or what was that like?
Yeah, a bit of all of it. Like, I think you've got to be really honest. I think I cannot stand it when church leaders do a politician spin job. You can't. You just got to hold up your hands and say, again, we did the best we could with what we had at the time, but these are the things that have happened. And actually, we did a bit of a consultation evening. So we did the whole speak to our leaders around us. So they're the leaders who are leading the community. So that's where we're like, come to our house for a fire pit. Let's have dinner together. Let's chat. Then we like speak to our wider community leaders and say, we've been chatting. We want to chat to you guys as well. What do you think? But there has to come a time where someone has to make a decision, don't they? Someone has to call it and say, this is what we're doing. So actually, I mean, you know, there's people who love it, people who hate it. I always go back to, I remember, I think it's probably about 2010, Facebook had been going for like, I don't know, however many years, and suddenly they changed the format. Everyone's putting in their post, oh, I'm never going to be on Facebook again. I'm boycotting it. I can't even remember what the change was now. So actually, you got to have some perspective, haven't you, of like, do you know what? And I think if you love people through it, and I mean, we're pretty open. Like, if you want to talk, come around for dinner. Like, if you're not happy about it, that's fine. There's no spin from us. But equally, you do always want to lift the vision of, like, this is where we're going and why. So this was our, we were pretty open about our reasoning of why. And yeah, to be honest, so, I think, sorry, no, you go.
No, I want the honest, give me, to be honest, I think, I'll take that line.
To be honest. Oh, I said it now. Okay. Well, to be honest, I think there were some people who, we probably have lost people along the way. And there were some people who love the idea of small communities that really appeals to some people. Other people, probably like my husband, and other people who are wired for big gathering just didn't love it. But I'll tell you something Dan always says about big gatherings, that I am probably more comfortable in the small, but I'm not opposed to the big because the church is called to be influential. We are called to be an influence and to be a city on a hill. So I don't think we can be small, but what I don't think we ever have to do is to shrink or diminish or become a holy huddle. We have to have perspective of what we're doing. And yeah, we're building the kingdom of God.
Yeah, and it's about staying big spirited. Like, I think you can, you know, if I'm meeting with someone for a coffee and encouraging them, it's one person, but I'm big spirited with them. And yeah, I think it's when you meet small with small spirited, you think, I just want to run a mile. And so, you know, I always think, I don't give a rip about numbers. As long as there's a big spirit in the place, God's going to do something great. And so, you know, and it's, you know, you guys are big spirited, which is what's amazing. My question follow on from that would be, so what have you done with that research of 150? So now your back says 300, 350 off Dan's on air, there's 790 this week. And next week, we think we're going to get more. And that was a low week. That's like conversation.
Next people on holiday that week.
Yeah, loads of, it was a holiday week, bank holiday week. And we smashed our records, you know, another game. But, you know, how do you then take the research of the 150? What have you decided to do with that?
Yeah, well, actually, that's a good question because why I said actually, I'm going to lean into that sentence so it doesn't look like I'm avoiding it. Actually, what happened was is that we never reached 150 in the individual ones anyway because of people are attracted to, there is an attraction to a gathering, isn't there? Not for everyone, because I think in everything, right, you can take a telescopic or a microscopic view. You can microscopic zoom into individual people's lives and how they feel, or you can take a zoom out telescopic, which is, I guess it's why apostles are great, aren't they? They kind of have this naturally telescopic view, whereas I don't, which is what I was kind of saying at the beginning. I'm prone to a bit of microscopic, kind of get a bit too contemplative and think about it too much. So if we zoom out and take a telescopic view, generally people get a gather like attracts like, and you know, it's easier to invite people. This is what we found. It's easier to invite people. So actually we weren't really seeing it. We never saw that 150 reached in the individual communities anyway. So what are we doing about it? What we're doing about it is being aware of the research and really trying. So we've gone to two services to help that. So our first service is much more contemplative. It's communion every week. It's quieter. Even for those that are still more kind of cautious around COVID and stuff, we're way more aware of that for them in that service. So we're doing two services. We're really strengthening our life group model. So that's where a really key part of our pastoral structure. So just trying to be really mindful of that, really. And essentially, all of that is just fancy words to say we're just trying to love people really well and trying to like encourage others to love people really well. And I think within a wider community, you can have smaller communities, not subcultures, but smaller communities within a wider community. So I think we're mindful of it.
Well, I want to celebrate you guys because you've stepped out and had the courage to step out and also the courage to, it's not a backtrack, the courage to go, guys, we'll just call it for what it is. And I think that like entrepreneurial, which I know Dan's an entrepreneur, but that idea of like, we're going to trial it and not just you and Dan, but the whole church that will trial it. And when it didn't work, just to go, it didn't work. Like, that's totally okay. And it didn't work like we thought it would. And so we're not too proud to not go back, and we're not just going to stand here and beat a drum that says we've got this research and we have to do this. And you know, essentially get finger pointy that they're not pulling their finger out and you need to be doing this. We just go, hold up, for the health of the body, why don't we just come back? I don't know. There's something really special and beautiful in that. It's only what we do in family, right? When we mess up in raising our own families, we try to, I don't know, whatever it might be, it doesn't work. And we all apologize to each other and get back on track and see what else works. And so huge credit to what you've done there, Joe. And I think the celebration is like you tried something different out of the desire to try help and reach more people. And that can only be a good thing, right? Like that's...
Yeah, the heart was good. And actually, just as you're saying that, I'm reminded of like with a therapy hat on now, there's like a really interesting theory by a guy called Winnicott around, it's called rupture and repair, that actually when you have a rupture, whether it's relational or like you've had to do a bit of reverse engineering because you said, oh, we took you down this path and it didn't really work. It's not the rupture that's the problem. It's the lack of repair that's a problem. So if there's ever a rupture relationally or, you know, organizationally, if the repair's there, it's okay. It's okay. Not to say, oh, go and have as many ruptures as you want and just say sorry. But I guess there's so much grace in this rupture repair idea that actually there was loads of repair there. There was loads of... And you know, there will be people who might listen to this and think, no, there wasn't. Like, I didn't see that personally because, you know, you've got the microscope and the microscope and the telescope. But telescopically and culturally, we really tried to add as much repair and relational repair to the rupture as we could. And I think that's very much our way of doing things as well. Rupture, if there's a rupture, let's just repair it.
Yeah, amazing. Joe, you help churches with your therapy, not just you doing one-to-ones, but you actually work with staff teams. Just as Pete, we're finishing off, how do people find out about this? Where do they find out about the work that you do? They wanted to bring you in to help. Where would they go?
Yeah, so on my website, which is joehargreavestherapy.com, I think. It's on there. And you can send me an email. So that's one of my favorite things to do, you know, go and work with church teams and look at how do we create healthy, holy, whole cultures where we know who we are, whose we are, where we can look at theories like rupture and repair and all that kind of stuff to help undergird how we work together as a staff team. You can just get in touch. I really do enjoy doing that work. And I find it very beneficial for the church because like you said, I can see that you are the same. I don't want to tear down the body of Christ. Jesus is very clear that about his body and his bride and how much value is put on the church. So I don't ever want to be part of that sitting in the cheap seats, tearing it down brigade. I want to be right in the arena, you know, blood, sweat, tears, doing it. And I think, yeah, there can be a lot of social commentators when it comes to church, but I think I'm not going to social commentate. I want to get in there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love helping people when they do feel like they're kind of full of blood, sweat and tears in the arena of how can we just mop you up a bit and like help you do your best. Do your best, be your best.
Well, Joe, you're an absolute gem and a huge, huge thank you for being so open and honest. And so do go check out all that Joe's got on there. Thanks for being with us, Joe.
My pleasure. Thanks.
Well, that was definitely raw, open and honest. And I really, really, really enjoyed chatting to Joe on that. I hope you did as well. I hope you got some good stuff from it. I hope that in your building of your church or your ministry or helping out where you are, that this totally blessed you. So big thanks for listening. Do let me know if you want me to interview someone. Let me know if you want something different to come from these. Let me know, but I'm just taking it for read that you're enjoying it. DM me, email me, send a pigeon to thank me, whatever it might be. I'm totally love hearing from you. So enjoy the rest of your week.